The limits of my language mean the limits of my world. Ludwig Wittgenstein. Someone swimming in a lake.
As many days of the year as possible, I begin here. Other than constant chatter in my head, it's a time that is largely language-free. If, that is, it is ever possible to be language-free. In 2011, my brother-in-law, Dennis, had a stroke that significantly affected his ability to use language. Particularly cruel for a man whose living had been as a journalist, a writer. Aphasia. Inability or impaired ability to understand or produce speech as a result of brain damage. Until Dennis had his stroke, I hadn't realised just how common aphasia is. Dennis had joined the ranks of over 1/3 of a million people living in the UK whose language, to some degree, has gone missing. The vast majority, the result of stroke. People like Barry.
I need some help.
And Junior.
I'm anxious about language.
You're anxious?
Yes.
Two men who know what it is to live in a world where a sudden storm in the brain has left them unable to rely on what is the invisible mainstay of life, language. This is a film about language and its loss, about aphasia, and about the organ that controls it all.
A human brain. Speechless, filmed, directed and produced by Richard Alwyn. Now a city square and gardens.
Queen Square in London, and the National Hospital for Neurology and Neurosurgery. Everything that goes on behind these walls is about the brain. In February 2017, I meet Barry, an inpatient on the hospital's neuro-rehab unit. Barry has been in hospital every day since a devastating stroke 4 months earlier. Once a gym-loving fitness fanatic, he now finds himself in a wheelchair, barely able to use the right-hand side of his body, and barely able to speak.
Not going to get much lengthening there.
He's now halfway through a stay on the rehab unit that's intended to help him back into the world.
We were intermittently getting some nice glutes. But...
So we did talk about this earlier in the team meeting.
Yes.
We were talking about thinking about making a visit home.
Yes.
Do you want to talk about that?
Three months.
3 months. You haven't been home in 3 months?
4 months.
4 months.
4 months. Oh.
4 months. Do you mean it's 4 months since the stroke?
Yes.
Or you're not due to go home for 4 months? Since the stroke?
4 months? 4 months? 4 months. Haven't go home.
You haven't been home in 4 months?
Yes.
It's a long time. Are you looking forward to going home?
No.
No? Why not? Are you scared?
Yeah.
Yeah. What makes you frightened?
4 months. 4 months. 4 months.
So this is the CT scan, so a CAT scan, that was performed on Barry when he was initially admitted to Watford General Hospital. So in this scan, the white areas, the bright white, is bone. And what you can see here are Barry's eyes and his nose.
And it's immediately apparent, isn't it, that there's a lot... See it terribly clearly, that there's a lot of damage.
So that's the initial scan. And this is the normal side of the brain, the right side.
Yeah.
And this darker bit is what we call kind of the low density. So it's much darker, and this is all the affected area of the brain here. So basically the brain tissue, when the blood supply has been cut off, the brain tissue dies.
Dr. Rachel Farrell, consultant neurologist at the National Hospital for Neurology and Neurosurgery. Now Dr. Kieran Allison, pathologist, Cambridge Brain Bank.
This is the brain of a man in his 70s who died of a cancer-related death. So it's essentially, from a neuropathological perspective, a normal brain. But the vast majority of the brain is the cerebrum, which is divided into left and right cerebral hemispheres. So when you look from the outside of the brain, what you're seeing really is a cerebral cortex. So different areas of the cerebral cortex are involved in different functions, different neurological functions. So the area I've marked in blue at the back of the temporal lobe is Wernicke's area. And that's an area that's important in the comprehension of language. The other important speech area, which I've marked in red here, is at the bottom of the frontal lobe, the left frontal lobe. And that is called Broca's area. And that's responsible for the production and planning of speech. And so in the vast majority of people, language areas are entirely on the left hemisphere.
Now with consultant neurologist, Professor Alexander Leff.
What do you understand language to be?
I would say language is something that's almost completely uniquely human, and it's one of the things that has enabled us to do so well as a species. And the reason for that, I think, is because it allows us to model the world. So how can we plan for something that we're going to do next Wednesday if we don't have language? So next Wednesday allows us to talk about a specific potential event forward in time, and without language we can't really do that. We can have a concept of time and a concept of things happening in the future or the past, and I suspect other animals do that, but for precise planning we really need language. And language is a form of abstraction. It's a way of abstracting the world and getting control of it.
Barry, 55 years old, still young for a stroke. Why had it happened? The frightening thing is that it wasn't fully clear. The only certainty is that for this landlord and father of three grown-up children, married to his childhood sweetheart Linda, life has been dramatically knocked off course. Now Barry is living alongside other men and women recovering from a variety of neurological conditions, their days divided between therapies and family visits.
Barry, what's your favourite biscuits? Do you have any Dodgers?
Linda visits most afternoons, often bringing cake and biscuits to share with the other patients. One day, she tells the story of Barry's stroke, describing how an ordinary working day had ended with the whole family concerned that Barry had not come home.
Jess was calling all the hospitals. She thought maybe you'd been in an accident. They hadn't identified you. So Jess was on the phone all night. Sam calling all night, all the hospitals. So then about 7:30 in the morning, Sam called a private detective and he was able to tell us roughly that the vicinity where your phone was. So Ben and Sam jumped in Ben's car and went towards Boreham Wood, where your phone was. Jess and Tammy went down the A1 and Tammy said, stop, I think that's my daddy's van. And Tammy ran back down the A1 and found you.
Oh.
And then she called the ambulance. We've estimated you were maybe 12, 15 hours in the van.
10 hours.
What was 10 hours?
In a van?
Yeah. Oh.
Do you remember being in the van, Barry?
No.
No, that's good you don't remember. It's better.
Barry has greying black hair and a beard. Linda.
I worked hard to accept what had happened. But I couldn't really do that until I got over the shock of him being in the van on his own all night, the shock of him having the stroke. Then I worked on accepting the situation it put him and myself and our children. Barry was always a real people's person, full of life, bit of a lad. I just think at times he must feel very lonely, very isolated. Not
fully understanding what one is saying, not be able to join in the conversation. So, for me, that's the biggest challenge.
A televised football match.
Flick off from Junior Agogo, it's Richard Walker. Can he find Ryan Williams? He does, it's Agogo! Surely for Rovers it is!
This is Junior Agogo, former Premier League footballer and former patient on the neuro rehab unit.
Great ball to Agogo! What a goal!
Junior had had a stroke in January 2015 when he was just 36 years old, 2 years after ending his football career. Today he lives in London with his dog Blanket and his mother Jeannie. The flat is a shrine to his football days. He's made a good physical recovery from his stroke, but he still struggles greatly with the impact that it's had on his language.
Do you remember how long it was before Junior was able to speak again?
I think it's after a year.
No, after 6 months. After 3 months.
Is it? First... 3 months, you were in, the first word you said was fucking
fuck
hell.
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking hell. And then I said, don't be swearing. Then the second one was, there were some things that he was saying, I couldn't understand what it was, you know, and he was trying, he was struggling. You know, I think it's after 6 months that the speech started coming out,
yeah,
when he started doing his speech therapy.
Did they find out why you had a stroke?
No, they still can't, you know.
But I'm alive, I'm well. Let's see what...
Deep down in your heart,
yeah,
there's something bothering
yes,
you.
Yes.
Yeah?
Okay, look, let's get on to my football days, yeah?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So look, where are we here?
This one was Barnet.
That's Nottingham.
Yeah. Nottingham, Bristol.
That's Ghana.
Yeah, Ghana as well.
Ghana, how many times you play for Ghana?
27 times.
Wow. And how many years did you play for?
For 17 years.
At the very top level?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Come on.
This is the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. This one.
Michael Essien.
Yeah.
Chelsea.
Yeah.
Framed football strips.
Samuel Eto'o. Didier Drogba.
Wow, Drogba. Are these guys you're in touch with?
Now, nobody gets in touch with me.
Really?
Yeah.
And do you think that's because of... Is that you? Because you're not getting in touch with them?
I don't know, man. Because I used to talk with a couple of boys that are the national team. But when the stroke happened, they all said no.
How do you know that? Do you mean they said no or you stopped talking to them?
Because I couldn't speak.
Blanquito. Out.
Are you still struggling to find words, or are you just not putting yourself in a position where you use them because you're anxious about language because of what happened to you?
Yeah, I'm anxious about language.
You're anxious?
Yes.
What about finding the words itself? Are you able to?
No, I can find the words. But I'm anxious to, because I'm anxious if I get the word wrong.
Does that happen often?
Oh, many times.
Yeah.
He's just struggling to bring out that word, that particular word he wants to say, and that word is not coming out. You know, so that's also...
Because I want to speak like you three.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all.
It seemed to me that Junior's language is pretty good. He can describe his world, present and past. But he, of course, doesn't see it like that. He's living with an acute sense of loss. 4 months after his stroke, Barry has none of Junior's admittedly hesitant fluency. One day, so that Barry's speech therapist, Jonathan, might know him better, Linda brings in a DVD of a BBC programme Home is Under the Hammer, in which Barry had appeared some years before.
There he is. For that
$170,000, the new owners are brothers Barry and Tony. They like to buy houses in need of some TLC and bring them back to life. Part of the appeal for Barry was the location.
Barry, where's your shirt?
Bare-chested Barry entering the house.
All right, hang on a minute.
So Barry, how well do you know the...
Can I just pause? Barry, you look so different. You've got dreadlocks and no top on. Must have been warm.
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
So I want to know all about you.
Oh, well, I spent 25 years with a big PLC. And I managed to get made redundant 4 years ago. And that was an opportunity. It was an opportunity to do what I'm doing now. I haven't spent many years with a big company, you know, working my 12 hours a day and, you know, short hair, so I can now do what I want.
You've got that.
I mean, look at me. I can do what I want, which is great. And I'm delighted I'm doing what I'm doing. I wish I'd done it 10 years earlier.
You are a landlord?
I'm a landlord, yes.
What type of landlord are you then?
As my wife would say, I'm a very soft landlord. I'm too easygoing. And I believe in life. If you're courteous with people, if you're fair with people, they reciprocate. And it goes both ways.
You really don't want to keep finding new tenants, and the one thing...
I really got a sense of you as quite a bubbly character.
Yep. Yep.
And you were really talking lots and lots and lots.
Yes. That way, fine. Tell a little bit.
So your talking was really clear. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other part of you as a landlord, you said to be courteous to people.
Yes.
So there's something about you.
Yes.
And your communication.
Yes.
That is very fair, courteous.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
We notice that now. We still notice that you have that sort of value of courtesy.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Even though you've got aphasia.
No.
Courtesy.
Kirsty.
Mm-hmm.
That. Oh.
Pathologist Dr. Kieran Allison's gloved hands slice a brain in two. Then a half is surrounded by a metal frame, which acts as a guide for the knife to slice off a thin cross-section. Professor Alexander Leff.
Brains have been around for a very, very long time. Human language, possibly as little as 100 or 200,000 years. So the view is it must have somehow been grafted on to brain regions that were already there. And if we look at some of those brain regions, those areas of the brain we know do other things anyway. So the frontal part of the brain is to do with decision-making memory. And for instance, we have a verbal working memory, which seems to involve certain parts of the brain quite similar to, very close to, or identical with language areas. So it's possible, in the extreme view, that there is no such thing as a purely language part of the brain.
So now I've sliced the brain, you can see the left side here, where the red ink is the Broca's speech area, where a lesion there, or a stroke or a tumour, for example, may cause an expressive aphasia, where they knew what they wanted to say, they could comprehend language, but they struggled to get the words out. And you can see further back, where the blue ink is, that's the Wernicke area. Stroke there, for example, would cause receptive aphasia, where the sufferer can speak fluently, but often devoid of any meaning. So having slices of a different brain, where you can see in this area here, in the sort of inferior frontal lobe, at this level, there's an old cavity there, which is an old stroke or an old cerebral infarct. So it's literally a hole, yeah. So the blood supply to that part of the brain will have been cut off, and that part of the brain will have died. So this patient may have had an expressive aphasia during life, where they know what they want to say, but they can't get the words out.
The modern view is that language is instantiated within the brain as a network of key nodes. And that's probably why people can improve with therapy, because if there was just one region that did one job and nothing else, if that bit becomes damaged, how can anything take over? It's not possible, it's gone. Unless you grow a new bit of brain. Whilst the brain is changing all the time, it's a dynamic environment, it doesn't seem like you can grow a new brain any more than you can grow a new finger. But if we think of language function, if it's shared across multiple regions with multiple connections and there's some damage to that network, that gives us some hope that therapy can work, because with a bit of experience-dependent learning, we can perhaps retrain the brain to learn.
Retraining Barry's brain to improve his communication is the business of the speech and language therapists on the neuro rehab unit.
Do you know any good strikers then?
Really?
Sometimes Barry's sessions with Jonathan focus on straightforward conversation, the give and take that underpins all relationships.
He's a striker?
Yes.
All right, tell me that. So,
Wayne Rooney
is a
striker.
Right. Ah, who does he play for?
However effortful and fractured the conversation, it's still possible and meaningful. And Barry's identity, the Barryness of Barry, seems to transcend language.
Manchester's United.
Yeah.
United.
Manchester United.
Yes.
Okay. So...
Other sessions with Jonathan can feel more like a linguistic boot camp in which Barry is given very specific language drills.
Jacket.
With me?
Where's my jacket?
When, for example, you ask him to repeat phrases, are you just trying to give him like a kind of a card he can carry so he can answer that? You can use that as a useful sentence in social situations, or is the act of repeating and repeating and repeating somehow fixing a broken bit of his brain?
I think we know that with the therapy that we're doing, what we're trying to achieve is generate neuroplasticity. So the areas that are functioning in the brain that are still working for Barry, we're really trying to target, and we're really trying to get to work better and compensate for the area that's been really damaged. So with exercises like the repetition, or with exercises like looking at pictures and hearing a sentence and trying to understand the meaning of that, we're working towards activating areas around the damaged area. I need some help. Yeah?
I need some help.
Good.
You're using most of your brain all the time. It can't afford to have any spare bits doing nothing. But we've mentioned how the brain is a network, and when you've got networks, it means you've got the potential to rechannel. So it's a simple analogy, but I think it's a reasonable one if you think of a metro network like the London Underground, and you take out King's Cross, a major node in that network. You say, well, is the whole thing going to come to a halt? And initially, of course, there'll be all sorts of problems. But over time, and with a bit of help, you could bypass. You're going to have to change here, here, and here, whereas you would only have changed once. And I personally think that happens a lot with language. And I think that's mainly what we're doing in terms of neuroplasticity.
Junior lifting weights in the gym.
The brain's plasticity is related to its age. The younger it is, the more it can adapt to new circumstances. Junior had youth on his side in his impressive recovery. That and the fact that, unlike Barry, he was brought quickly to hospital. In the world of neurology, they say time is brain. For every hour without treatment, a stroke-affected brain ages by more than 3.5 years. Junior was in hospital within 60 minutes of the onset of his symptoms, and was given medication to dissolve the clot, which was also physically removed from his brain.
So what happened on the day that you had the stroke? I know you don't remember it all. Can you kind of take us through what happened?
I was running with my dog.
I was coming back home, and I was near the Marriott Hotel.
Hey, hey, shut up.
And the stroke happened. And when I got off, I was in the hospital with my mom saying that I couldn't speak. I was in a bad way. Yeah. Mm. But now I'm doing okay, but yeah.
It just came out of the blue completely.
Yeah.
No warning, he hadn't been ill or anything.
No, I don't think so. I think I thought you said you had a blackout, you know, you fell dizzy.
Yeah, no. I fell dizzy, but I was thinking that I've not eaten.
Okay.
Yeah.
So. On the day.
Yeah. Because I run in the morning at 5 o'clock.
Was Blanket actually literally with you when you had the stroke?
Yeah.
What did he do?
He
ran.
No. He came to my, he went on my test.
Chest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, actually the ambulance, the lady that treated him said, Blanket was sitting on his chest and Blanket didn't want anyone to touch him. So like if they wanted to take off his clothes, he was barking.
When you woke up and you came around, were you thinking? Because you couldn't speak. Could you not have thoughts? Or?
Yeah, I had thoughts, but I'm saying that, where is my voice? I was baffled, man.
Could you understand what people were saying to you?
Yeah. But I was thinking that, where is my voice? I cannot speak.
Were you able to sort of have kind of conversations in your head? Were you able to kind of form in your mind what you wanted to say?
Yeah.
It was. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was mad, man. Because I could think it, but I couldn't say it.
Yeah.
And it was mad.
Do you think a big part of the next challenge is your confidence?
Yeah. I haven't got any confidence.
You've lost that.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's okay.
Did you tend to kind of hide away? Or?
Yeah. But that's life.
He sits forward as if to get up, but then sits back on the sofa.
Junior's stroke seemed to haunt him. His mother said that sometimes he spent whole days in bed, avoiding the risk of being in situations where his language might let him down.
Do you make chicken soup?
Yes.
Yeah. It's quite nice, but it's not very difficult. It's like something that's quite easy to do.
Cheese soup.
Am I right?
Cheese soup.
For Barry, his world since his stroke is dominated by the here and now, his days divided between various therapies preparing him for the ultimate goal of a return to life at home. There's occupational therapy with Shauna, his key worker, helping him with all aspects of practical daily life.
Hold on, yeah, that's okay. Bring your other hand in. Hang on.
Barry being helped to make a smoothie.
Physiotherapy is with Ellen, working to get Barry back on his feet.
Yeah. Can you still breathe?
No. Yeah.
Yes, you can. Can you still breathe?
Yes.
Good.
Left. Right. Left. Right foot. Left foot. Right foot.
And most weeks, Barry has a session with the unit's neuropsychologist, Sherilyn. It's her role to help Barry with his emotional life, especially his anxiety about returning home.
Who's going to be at home tomorrow?
I don't know.
Because Linda's in Spain, isn't she?
Yes.
Do you still have a house key?
Yes. Wow-wee.
Home seems to hover over everything. Sometimes the prospect appears to excite Barry, but mostly it fills him with dread.
And then if you feel comfortable, we will drive up to here.
He'd made it clear that he was worried that with his language problems, he couldn't call for help, but it feels deeper than that. A series of home visits are planned by Barry's team, and photos and videos of his house are shown to him to try and reduce his anxiety.
Is this a room that you would sit in a lot?
I don't know.
OK.
I don't know.
OK. Are you trying to say to us that you're not sure how you're going to feel when about this?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Mm. It's been a while, hasn't it?
I don't know.
Okay, should we look at another picture, Barry?
What's this one?
Bathroom. Mm.
Have things changed much?
Yes. Yes.
In the house or with you?
Both.
Both. Does it still feel like your house?
No.
Hmm. Yeah. But we'll do this in small stages until you feel comfortable, until you get used to it, and then until it starts feeling more like your home. You're doing really well.
No.
These things will be difficult, Barry. They will. But this is the best way to do it, rather than just take you there and leave you to deal with it, the anxiety. This is a nice gradual way for you to get used to seeing it again, and for you to connect again with your home.
Oh.
Yeah.
Shauna. Oh.
Barry, I think this plan of going there and experiencing what it feels like to be there would be really helpful for you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You're not going to do it on your own?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh.
Ready for another one?
Yes.
Go on then. We're going to show you the outside of the van first. Are you ready? Linda said that you love this van almost more than her. Is that true?
Yeah.
She's got a lot to compete with, hasn't she?
That van. Happy.
Happy.
Happy, lucky, say day week.
7 days a week you'd be in the van. No wonder Linda thinks you love it more than she does.
Now Sherilyn and Shauna accompany Barry in his wheelchair outside to a waiting ambulance.
Mike is going to bring you up, OK?
Thank you.
Now takeaway coffee in hand, Barry's riding in the ambulance.
How are you feeling about this?
I don't know. Whether I confused.
Confused? You're feeling confused?
Yes.
Sherilyn keeps a steadying hand on Barry's arm as he looks expectantly at the street of half-timber houses up ahead.
How many minutes?
1 minute.
Okay. Can we just drive up quite slowly, Mike? Is that okay?
Yeah. Just drive past quite slowly. Okay, so we're going to just drive slowly past.
No. That one there.
That one there.
That one there.
Okay.
They stop at a house where the white van from the hospital pictures is parked outside. As Sherilyn and Shauna try to get Barry's wheelchair over the front step, a sign on the ground reads, "Sod the dog, beware of the West Ham fan."
It's all right.
Now Barry's sitting in the hall with his head bowed.
Okay, so just look around slowly. Those pictures of your kids up on the mantelpiece. Okay.
He points.
Yep, all up there. Lots of pictures, aren't there? Three kids. Yeah, lovely. Are you happy to sit here for a while?
No.
Or do you want to go somewhere else?
I don't know.
Remember we said that you might be happy in the kitchen?
They wheel Barry up to patio doors in the kitchen. Then he looks out in wonder at the autumnal garden outside. They reverse him past dishes on display and framed family photos, including one in which Barry's shaking his son's hand.
like it, this one.
A photo of him and Linda in their 20s, lying on a picnic blanket.
Oh, I don't know whether...
It's a lovely photo, isn't it? Is it after you got married? You've got a ring on the finger there.
He looks away, emotional.
Yeah.
Sherilyn takes the photo away.
And then more photos up here. These look like photos of parents.
Yeah.
Is that one? Is that you?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, is that you and your brother?
Yeah.
Oh, and you had a dog as well. Do you want to leave, Barry? Do you want to leave?
Yes.
You want to leave?
Yes.
All right. Back to the ambulance.
Thank you.
Okay.
A sign for Queen Square.
Aphasia is sometimes described as an invisible disability. It's only when you talk to someone that you might know it's there. And it's only by talking or trying to talk that a person with aphasia can make any degree of recovery. Use it or lose it, I was constantly told by the neurologists and therapists. 2 years after his stroke, Junior is still struggling with this. He makes occasional visits to the neuro rehab unit to discuss his progress with consultant speech and language therapist, Jax.
So how's your week been?
My week hasn't been too good.
Why?
Because the stroke, man. I've known that it's for the rest of my life, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's getting me down a bit.
Who did you talk to about that?
No one.
So he had his stroke 2 years ago, presented with severe aphasia. It was difficult to assess him because his language was so impaired.
Was he speaking at all?
Not at the beginning. He wasn't speaking at all at the beginning. When I first saw him, he couldn't say anything at all. But started to make quite a quick recovery in the early stages of some words, some gestures, but it's been much slower in the last year.
Is that because of the area of the brain which has been damaged, or is that because of his approach to the problem that he now faces?
I think it's both. I think it's the psychosocial adjustment to the level he's at. It's about who you are, how you want to move forward. You know, some people with a level of language as Junior might do more, some people might do much less. But he doesn't go outside his safety zone at the moment. Because your aphasia isn't the thing that's really stopping you doing these things anymore. Your aphasia is good. You're good.
Am I good?
Yeah.
But you see it, but why doesn't other people see it?
See what?
That I'm good.
Yeah. Or do you behave differently? Are you less confident?
Yeah.
Yeah, so in this room you're quite confident, aren't you? Yeah. Do you remember
why is that?
Why do you think?
But I know you. But when I spoke to...
You don't like being judged. You don't like your communication being judged, do you?
Yeah.
But I was...
But no one likes that being judged on their communication.
No, of course they don't. Of course they don't. With me, you... Other people here, he communicates really quite well, in the moment, functionally, ably, and socially, to some degree. But beyond that, he doesn't have the free flow of language to communicate his needs, his thoughts.
But is that because...
His concern.
But if he's having trouble having thoughts, is that because he can't...
He says he doesn't have.
But does he need language to have thoughts?
Well, that's, that's a million-dollar question.
Some patients claim that they just really have a problem with word finding. They feel like it's about this gap between having ideas and then having the words to express them. But they just can't grab the words in order to spit them out to tell them to you. Mm. And in that case, you can almost think of them as someone who is language locked in, so that inside their head, everyday language is going on relatively normally. But when they want to communicate with you and find those language tokens and spit them out as speech, they can't do it. I'm not sure how common that happens. I think there's a bit of a halfway house where they have word, if your word finding difficulties are bad enough, you also, certain ideas are hard to grasp as well, because you just cannot hold certain abstract ideas in your mind if you haven't got those language tokens as sort of placeholders. But we can almost judge from behaviour. So patients with aphasia have not lost knowledge of the world. They do not have what we call a semantic problem with the world. They may make what we call semantic errors. So when they want to say dog, they may come out with cat, but that is a sort of language error. They know what a dog is. They know what a cat is. They know who you are. They know who they are. They know everything around them. So they don't have a problem with understanding the world, but they have a problem with the language aspects, the way of understanding the world in a more abstract level.
Junior, out for a run with Blanket in a park.
It seemed to me that Junior's discomfort in the world, in a sense, confirms his understanding of the world and the situation that he finds himself in with his aphasia.
Hello, Daddy.
She's videoing you.
My brother-in-law's aphasia was very different.
Hello.
Dennis's stroke had been like a sniper attack on his language only, sparing his mobility, but leaving him speaking a sort of colourful gibberish, with all the rise and fall of meaning, but none of the actual sense, at least not to anyone else.
Dennis, can you say something for the camera? Make a speech.
Hello, Satan Spearing, through the birth think Spearing.
It wasn't ever entirely clear. Did Dennis think he was making sense and we were not? Did he understand others from their words or from their actions and gestures? Dennis lived like this for 4 years until his death. It must have been isolating, lonely, despite being at home with those he loved.
Is it nearly lunchtime?
Barry sitting with his head bowed in hospital.
In the weeks after Barry's first home visit, his mood declines dramatically. He seems to withdraw from the world, as if the home visit had been a sort of statement of all that he's lost, something too much to bear.
Barry, I'm going to do your hair.
Even with his closest friend, Ronin, Barry seems to shut down.
Barry, you look funny with glasses. Mm. Yeah.
Ronan's cutting Barry's hair with clippers.
I'm quite nervous doing your hair, by the way. It's very tricky, you know? It's very tricky, Barry. Okay.
It's hard to know what's going on in Barry's head. It must be exhausting, forever hunting for that tip-of-the-tongue thing when you can't quite get to the word, the name or the place that you know is in there somewhere, if only. And I'd heard that one patient with aphasia had described his thoughts as sticky, as though the inner chit-chat of daily thinking got constantly snagged on its way out into the world.
This is true friendship.
Been a pleasure. Can I take this off?
How long have you two guys known each other?
Barry, how long have we known each other? Barry, how long have you known me? How long have you known me, Barry? 10 years?
22 years.
22 years. Yeah, move forward a bit. Yeah, 22 years roughly. Right. Yeah, I'll clean you up. Don't worry. You happy? Okay. Okay. Give me 2 minutes. I'll just finish it.
As Ronan steps away, Barry looks withdrawn and despondent. On another day, Barry's mood seems to be the same. Dr. Rachel Farrell talks to him.
How are you? How are you feeling in yourself? I hear it's been a hard week.
He smiles ruefully and shakes his head.
I know that when you come closer to going home, it gets difficult, okay? But when you go home, you will have more support. There will be more therapists from the community, okay? But 6 months here is a long time. And it's good to get home because you won't need to be in a hospital. You'll need to be at home with people coming to you. You know, doing the things you want to do in your house. okay? Because here, it's not home, yeah? But you will still have ongoing rehabilitation, okay? It doesn't stop when you leave us, yeah?
He looks away.
Okay.
So when I see Barry on his own in a day room, he's sitting there, is his head full of conversation, or is it a blank space?
Who can know? He can't tell us, so everything is, an assumption, really. You know, it's very difficult. You know, if somebody is not able to write and is not able to speak, it's very difficult to know exactly what's going on. We can ask whether he has a word in his head, whether he, you know, but he can't get it out, or he's searching for a word. But it's very difficult to drive that down. I would imagine, there's a lot of activity there, but whether it's with words, it's difficult to say for him. But we are aware that he is significantly cognitively impaired as well. His ability to process things, the speed with which he kind of works through things and generates an output has been impacted on.
Barry sitting alone on a ward, then in a coffee room. Professor Alexander Leff.
You would have trouble understanding your place in the world if you lived on a desert island and had nobody to talk to. So when you discuss things with people, your ideas change. That's the whole point. The other thing I'd say is that language is social. I mean, Wittgenstein tells us that, and I think he's right. So there's no such thing as a private language. There's no utility to a private language. There's no point in it.
I'm not sure I fully understand that. Is that the notion that language only exists if it's a sort of social interaction?
So we may all have a different or slightly different perception of red, or what we would call red. I mean, this is a sort of classical argument. How do I know that the red you're seeing is the red I'm seeing? And at some level, we'll never know that, because that's to do with perception. But as soon as we give it a label and we call it red, that's when we start discussing it and it becomes a thing for both of us, and that we know that we've got a shared object or subject that we're talking about. And that's really what Wittgenstein meant when he said there's no such thing as a private language.
Sorry, Barry, just giving your leg a bit of a stretch.
Physio Ellen.
Say, Barry, if I wanted to buy in South London...
Yeah.
What area would you recommend me to buy in?
Leicester, so.
What about South London?
Clapham.
Clapham?
Yeah.
It's expensive. Not for my budget, I don't think, for my budget.
Lewisham.
Lewisham?
Yeah.
OK, like Catford area around there, like... Maybe?
Yeah. £800,000.
£800,000?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have that kind of money. I don't think I've got a deposit to put on that kind of house. I'm going to have to move out of London, Barry.
Yes. Yes.
Good.
Ellen helps Barry to stand upright.
OK. You all right?
Yes.
So we're going to do some walking on that leg?
Yes.
OK, off we go. So, right, bigger step. All right, are you OK?
Yes.
Okay. Bigger step on the right. Big step. Good. Now, a bit faster.
Barry's right leg's in a support, and he walks with a pronounced limp.
That's it. Bigger step, the right leg.
For both Barry and Junior, for everyone with aphasia, it seems that being able to be in the world with depleted language is the most essential, but also the hardest task of all.
Been up to?
Now? Since I last saw you, I went to the cinema this weekend. I saw Fast and Furious 8. It was good, man. But there's Vin Diesel has got to stop acting Fast and Furious. He's done it 8 times, man. Yeah, but Vin Diesel is a good actor.
What have you got coming up? You got any plans?
I need to get my communication back on point with a speaking language therapist.
Have you found one you're going to work with?
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. How often are you seeing someone?
Twice a week.
Great. Is that going well?
It's going okay. It's going okay.
A dog scampering off. Junior sitting on a bench in his running gear.
I'm cold, man. Cold. Yeah.
You better go.
Yeah. See you later, man.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much for coming.
Junior runs off with blanket. Ellen's helping Barry with stairs.
Yeah. Cool.
Oh. As Barry's stay on the unit approaches its end, despite his many improvements, he remains reluctant to accept that he will soon be moving home. After almost 7 months in hospital, it's understandable that the institution has become the home. But it feels more than that. It seems that part of the problem for Barry is not being able to acknowledge the progress that he's making, nor perhaps accept the extent of the damage to his brain.
That's what it looks like if you've got a problem in your language area. Brains just don't get better easily, as you know. How many months? 6 months, so 7 months. So
yes,
far.
Yes.
Yeah. And have you got better?
No.
No?
Yes.
What's got better? What can you do now? What can your brain still do?
Think.
Think? Yeah. Talk?
Talk.
Walk. It's supposed to be walk. Is that a funny gesture?
Walk.
Sometimes you get cross because it's not happening quick enough.
Yeah.
Mm. Are you okay about that some days and then not on other days?
No.
No. You always want it to be quicker,
yes,
don't you?
Yes, yes.
It's all right. It's a tough one. So tough, Barry. How do you keep getting motivated?
I don't know.
Because you're so good at that. Oh, well, you hate people praising you, don't you? You don't like it when I praise you. No. It's not a great thing, is it? Stroke. No.
An ambulance parks outside Barry's house.
5 days before his final discharge, Barry goes on one last home visit.
On Tuesday, then, what time do you want to go?
I don't know.
Most people kind of stick around until just after lunch and have some tea and cake with everybody.
Yeah.
Do you want to do something like that so you can say goodbye to everyone?
No. I don't want fuss.
You don't want a fuss? Okay. And when you're saying, I don't want to fuss, what do you mean by that, Barry? Are you talking about when you come home?
I don't know whether it's viable. Viable?
Viable?
Yes.
Okay. So you're... Are you talking about coming home and managing at home?
No.
Okay. Are you talking about needing some help at home?
Yes.
Yeah. Debs and the community team, they're there to help you get stronger. So rehab isn't over. You don't need to stay in with us, Barry. You need to come home now. Yeah?
On the eve of Barry's last day in the unit, he and Linda have a final meeting with a neuropsychologist, Hannah.
How do you feel about your relationships at the moment with Linda or with your children in terms of being able to speak with them? How do you feel you get on with Linda when you can't speak so clearly?
He gestures so-so.
Hit and miss. And can I ask Linda the same question?
Yes.
How is it for you in terms of your relationship with Barry since he's not been able to speak so clearly?
Sad.
one of the things which we know following a stroke is that people have lots of losses.
Yes.
And one of the most significant losses that can happen is in terms of aphasia.
Yes.
And not being able to speak so clearly or understand so easily.
Yes.
And it then leads to a whole element of what your role is and what other people's role is who you know, and about the difficulties that can follow in the renegotiation of relationships. Is that something that you've experienced, Linda?
Hassle. Yeah.
Is that hassle for you, or do you feel that you are hassle?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Hassle.
Hassle for who?
You.
For me?
Me, you.
For you as well?
Yes.
And for me?
Yes.
What you used to say all the time was, it is what it is.
Yeah.
When things happened, you said, well, it is what it is.
Yes.
So it is what it is. You've had a stroke. Now you need to come home tomorrow and continue with your rehabilitation at home.
Yes.
Now Barry's smiling as he sits eating jammy toast in a hospital dining room. Meanwhile, Linda's sorting through papers on his bed. There's a West Ham cushion on it.
6 months. 6 months he's been in this bed. 6 long months.
Also at the dining table is another man who sits staring into space with a tablet computer in front of him. Linda's taking down pictures and photos.
Are you feeling ready for this?
Yes.
Much more than this.
A tea party for Barry and his team.
OK, so which hand do you want to shake with? That hand or that hand?
I don't know.
Consultant Jacqueline McIntosh shakes Barry's right hand.
Both hands.
Really good.
Therapist Jonathan eating cake.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed working.
Thank you.
Oh, well done.
Thank you.
Ellen gives Barry a hug, then he's wheeled out by Linda.
Bye bye.
Shauna gives him a hug.
No tears. Shauna's gonna be
cuddled.
Aww.
Oh, look at you.
Do you know what? We're going to turn around. Are you going down? Yeah, we're going down. Oh, look, we've got the farewell party, Ellen and Shauna. Our girls, our best girls. Bye.
Shauna and Ellen wave Barry and Linda off as the lift doors close.
I find it all so amusing to think I did all that, and may I say, not in a shy way, oh no, not me, I did it my